My last week, yes, the audio was absolutely terrible because I didn't know how to speak into a mic. I was intimidated by a mic because we have this really big mic.
Yeah, so what you all missed out on is, see, we did like 5 minutes and then Zeke's like, no, stop it. We're like, what? And yeah, anyways, the whole 5 minutes, he was acting really weird. It turns out he was like intimidated by the mic of all things.
I was a complete nervous wreck. I couldn't believe it. Doesn't matter if you're on stage. Doesn't matter if I, you know, act in front of children or give sermons. This one simple mic freaked me out.
Which is so strange because like you could just ignore it and just keep talking.
I couldn't. And then the solution was for me to look away from it, which is why my audio was so terrible.
It was pretty bad. So I don't need feedback on that. We know.
We know because we have to listen to it before we put it out. So yes, we know. Apologies last week that the audio was terrible. But we're here now. We get it. And we're comfortable. I learned about all these things that I can't move the mic. I can't bang my fist on the table when I'm thinking or drop my phone or have to laugh away from the mic. None all these that. Things. Can't take a sip. So many things. All right. Well, anyway, welcome to the A to Z Work Podcast by CPE. It's Zeke here with my friend April.
Hello.
As always. Yeah. For those who are joining us, we're talking about work following the sermon at church. And this week, we're talking about an interesting one. It's a work of the Lord.
Mm.
It's an interesting category because, you know, at church, we've been talking about a few categories like working at home, working outside your home. And then we have this final one called work of the Lord. So it's a bit of a funny one.
Funny in what way?
I don't know. It just seems like a funny term because...
Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, it seems serious. Like, we're getting real.
Is it quantifiable, work of the Lord? Does that make it less real?
Yeah. Maybe not as quantifiable as we'd like. Like, you know, at work, you've got like KPIs, you've got targets you got to meet, and you can sort of track that.
And at home, you have kids that go from 1 year old to 2 year old. They go from being able to eat by themselves to, not eating by themselves to eating by themselves.
Right? There's like markers. There's markers. Whereas I think work of the Lord, I think parts of it are quantifiable, for sure. But then there's a lot of stuff that it's like the whole idea of you're planting the seed, right? Like you're just one step of a person's.
Or maybe you're the reaper. Maybe you get to reap a lot of the benefits.
I mean, then you're very lucky.
What is work of the Lord, first of all? I think we should probably define that.
That's true.
So what do you think?
Well, I think it's in the name, right? Like it's the work for the Lord and it's what we're commanded to do, which is go forth and make disciples of all nations.
Yep. So that Matthew 28, before Jesus leaves the earth, he says to his disciples, hey, go and make disciples of all nations, that sort of stuff. So bring people back into knowing Jesus and God.
Mm.
That's the work of the Lord. Do you reckon church ministry or things you do for, I don't know, driving kids around to get to youth group, is that all stuff work for the Lord?
Or yeah,
is it,
totally.
Is it specifically just things like actually telling people about the gospel?
I think that's the first thing we think of when we think of work of the Lord. Like, that's what I think of anyway. Like, evangelizing is clearly work of the Lord. But then I think all these other things contribute to the whole bigger picture, right, of work of the Lord.
Right. So there's a time and place for these things. It's not necessarily like...
What do you mean by time and place?
Like, you don't have to always be evangelizing or, you know, standing on your desk and going, yeah, repent or die, or you've got to imagine that though.
Oh gosh. In the office?
I feel weird about when I see people in like Queen Street Mall or something standing on a box doing that.
Like yelling at people.
Yeah, like there's a certain level of respect. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But even as a Christian, I'm like, that's not for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I respect that you can do that. Is it the right approach? Personally, I don't think so. I don't know though. Like maybe they do get people. I don't know. Like I wonder what they get out of it. Not they themselves, but
yeah. No, I know what you're trying to say. What comes of it? If there is a result, we don't know, but maybe there is. But anyway, what were we talking about? I can't remember.
No, I can't remember either. No. You were saying like, can you imagine someone yelling like?
Oh yeah. So you cannot be always doing that. So I think there's a lot of things that we can be doing. How we live our lives, modeling godly character, you know, molding the culture around us. Like, you know, there's different things we can be doing in our workplace or wherever we are, at home, at work, that shows that we're like God.
Mm.
And then, because it's not always going to be the time for us to just preach to people. It's not.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I see. You know what I mean? That's so what you mean by time and place. Yeah, so, yes.
As you go along living your life, you are doing these things that show people who God is through your character, through your person. But at some point in time, they have to hear the gospel.
Yeah.
They have to.
I liked that point in the sermon where it's like you can do all these good things and be like show your character.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, if they don't know you're Christian, then they just think you're a good person, which I found really challenging because that's like the hardest bit.
That is the hardest bit, right?
Yeah.
And have you had any experiences of doing that with any non-Christian friends of yours before?
Specifically at work?
I mean, doesn't have to be. Could be just generally.
I think just generally I've had it. Like I remember one time I was in this chat with some work girls. And I was quite close to these work girls, so I felt quite comfortable.
Yep.
I don't think I'd ever said that I was Christian before. But then, and I can't remember what the topic was. We were talking about something, and I remember being like, oh, I really feel like I need to say that I don't agree with them because I'm a Christian. And then I remember like umming and ahhing about like, oh, like, I don't want to be like, I don't want to ruin the vibes of this chat right now. Like, do I say it? Anyways, I put it in the chat and then I remember there was like a bit of a long pause before someone replied. And that, I mean, to be fair, that could have been for many other reasons. Like they could have been busy at that moment. Like, but obviously like your mind goes to the worst place. Like, sure. Oh my gosh, like they're judging me now.
Yeah.
But it was fine. Like they, you know, the conversation just continued. Oh, I really wish I could remember what the topic was of that conversation. But yeah, I think it just goes to show that people, I mean, there are definitely people out there who are overtly, say, not even anti-Christian, like anti-religion even. But I think most people most of the time are quite open to at least knowing what your beliefs are and respecting that.
Sure. So what happened in that conversation in the end? Did you manage to say what you wanted to say?
I did. I managed to say what I wanted to say, which was good because I felt like, you know those moments where you have like a sort of, you think it's like, the Holy Spirit where it's like not even your conscience because it's like beyond your conscience. You're like, I really need to say this.
Yeah. It just felt like the right time to say it and you're ready. You almost had all the right words in your head and sometimes you fumble your way through and that's okay.
Yeah.
But you said what you need to say and they're still your friends?
Yes.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, I really wish I could find, I'm sure I could find that chat somewhere and scroll through.
How did they respond to it?
I think from memory, it was sort of like a polite, I respect your opinion, but I don't agree. That sort of vibe.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, like, oh, okay. It was just like, oh, okay, cool. Like, those are your thoughts. These are my thoughts.
Sure.
Let's continue.
But you never know.
No, you never know.
You never know it will come back.
Again, could be a seed.
It could be a seed.
Could be a seed.
You know, the funny thing is,
in their long journey.
Yeah, the funny thing is that I remember talking to a work colleague this one time and she was telling me all about all her woes and stuff and we're pretty good friends. And it got to this point where I thought, same thing. I was like, I feel compelled to say something or share some sort of mini two ways to live or, you know, something about Christ and what I believe. And same reaction. Okay, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think back to it and I don't think she responded necessarily positively or negatively, but there wasn't any further thought. I thought, should I have said that?
That was the vibe in the chat. It was just like, okay, cool. Like, let's move on.
Should I have just left it at, you know, being a good friend and not said anything? Because there's a time and place for you to just, like, if someone's mourning or something, they just go, yeah, that's a really tough time.
Yes, of course. Yes, yeah.
But in that moment, I was like, you know what, I should say something. But I don't know. Maybe one day, maybe she'll think back to that conversation and be like, man, that was worth it.
Again,
maybe.
You never know.
You never know. But it felt right. And I don't regret
doing
it because I don't even see that person anymore. So hopefully something comes of it.
Hopefully.
But what do you reckon is the motivation behind even having these conversations or feeling compelled to say something or tell people about the gospel? Because if it's purely just that one verse, you know, go make disciples of all nations, I think there's something a bit more than that, or at least from an emotional level, there's something more than just reading a line in the Bible. What do you reckon?
I reckon it's it's that whole idea that as Christians we're living for something different, and like we're fundamentally different. Like our purpose, again, like going back to the sermon, like our purpose in life is different. Like it's not to earn a promotion, get more money, buy a better house, buy whatever. Like our this is our purpose in life, to live for God and then to live for his purpose for us. So I think like if you've accepted that in your heart, you just, yeah, there's like a different motivation for things and your view on things are different. And I think that's where it stems from, like a fundamentally different view of the world that we live in. And then like a different view of the issues that we live through.
Yeah. And if you truly believe it, I get the feeling that you'd want to tell people.
Yeah, totally.
You'd want to tell people. I mean, these guys are struggling to find purpose or find meaning in whatever they're doing, whatever the circumstance is.
And like as a good friend, like even if you're not a friend, like, you know, you would do it. But as a good friend.
As a good friend, you'd want to tell them. You'd want to help them. If you genuinely believe this, then you'd want to say something.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I always get the feeling that, yeah, I know the answer. So why shouldn't I be telling these guys? Even for the sake of it, you know, causing some, I don't know, social anxiety or tension.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's worth doing.
It's so hard though. Like I will say there's also many other times where, yeah, like you'll be in a conversation and the opportunity presents itself and you're like, oh, and then it sort of just moves on before you can say anything. And then it's like, oh, the moment passed.
Yeah.
I sort of wish I said something.
On the flip side, I have a friend who I was quite tight with, and, you know, I said a lot about or presented my worldview, and it got to, I think, the point where that person didn't really want to hear my opinions anymore because they knew what my opinions were so clearly.
Yeah, right.
So they stopped discussing things with me that we normally would. And I don't know how I feel about that, but I guess that's just how it goes sometimes. I trust God that ultimately, you know, he'll take care of the situation. I've done what I can. Did I do it right? In the right time and place? I don't know. Were there better things I could have done? Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. And that's okay. We're still tight. But just, I guess a lot of that life advisory aspect is we don't really have that in our life anymore. So that's okay.
Do you still talk? Is it the same though? Like he won't talk to you about
Things anymore? I think so. I think we're sort of getting back to it a little bit more these days, but not so much as before, because I think we're just on very different paths.
Right.
But maybe at some point that person will realize, you know what? I might have to explore this path that Zeke's talking about. I hope.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you're still talking. Like, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, what do you reckon? Like, talking about the gospel, oh man, that's no easy thing to do.
No. It's so hard. And then there's a whole thing of like, you don't want to say the wrong thing. So then you think about what you're going to, you sort of overthink what you're going to say. And then it becomes too daunting because then you're like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to tell them the wrong information.
Has it always been like that?
Like for me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not. Like I do remember back in our CIA days.
Now, that's exactly now what youth. I was thinking, oh, really? As well. Yeah, I was just about to go, when we were back in youth,
That's so
who
funny.
Were we back then? We were like first, second year uni students helping high school.
Even earlier than that. I'm thinking like when I was in CIA /CPU. Like I remember like we would have, there were so many people in my grade that would come because we'd be like, yeah, just come. Like come on Fridays, like check it out. Yeah. And then obviously like we led CIA together.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
In early uni. Maybe it was uni.
Yeah, what about
maybe
it?
Just like get self-conscious in uni.
I think I'm self-conscious now, but what I was more thinking was when I was in high school or leading high school teens as a leader in youth, how much of what I was saying, despite all the confidence I had, the best answer, you know, like what were those words I was spouting out? I feel sorry for the kids, and I mean hopefully it affected some of them, but man, I had confidence back then, and I can assure you that it was not the best words that I could have used. And
yeah, yet,
here
true.
We still are, you know, 10 odd years later. And, you know, I think there's at least one or two that were challenged. But, I mean, definitely not the perfect words, and it still did something, I suppose.
Yeah, actually, I remember I had this friend who was, I mean, I have this friend, sorry, she's still a friend. She's still around, we're still friends. She was very anti-religion in general, like a very like humanities kid, politics, logic, and all that sort of stuff. And so me and this other friend, who actually comes to our church now, shout out to Brian. Hi, Brian. We would spend some lunch times like talking to her about Christianity. I would say Brian more so than me. But every now and then, like, I'd have a chat with her about it. And I think initially she wasn't very, like, I think the conversations were more to argue rather than to be curious, like genuine curiosity.
Yep.
But then over time, I mean, who knows what happened? God worked. She became a Christian. And she's like, yeah, a really strong, solid Christian now. And still is all these years later. And yeah, it's just, she was one of those people that gave off the vibe of like, I just don't want to talk to Christianity with her because it'll end in an argument,
yep,
sort of thing.
Yep.
But yeah, like that worked out great. So
I think the point is that no matter how imperfect we are in our words, in our actions, and God knows how terrible I was as a teen and even as a young adult in terms of my actions, how many people I've offended with all the things that I've done, God can still use those imperfections to reach people somehow.
Yeah.
Very graciously. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm grateful that I've been allowed to keep going in this and even to do MTS now. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that God can use us in these ways.
Definitely not by our own efforts.
So don't feel intimidated is what I'm trying to say, you know?
Well, I mean, if you feel intimidated, that's okay.
That's okay. It is okay.
Like, I think I will always be intimidated.
Right.
And that's fine. Like, it's not, me I don't too. Think I could stop feeling that.
I got intimidated by a mic. So it's okay to feel intimidated.
Even by inanimate objects.
Yes, it's okay. But it's how you work through it.
Yeah.
Well, what? Yeah. Sorry. You were saying it's okay to feel intimidated.
Yes. That's fine. It's human.
Yes, human. But also don't let those opportunities go by when they do come
totally.
Up. And I think it's a lot of life as well. Don't let the opportunities go by to mold the culture in your workplace at home. Don't let the opportunities go by to, you know, when you have a tough time in a whatever situation to be angry, you know, or use that anger at that time to reflect and say, maybe I could have dealt with that situation differently.
Mm.
And this is all stuff that models godly character, opportunity for growth, which we're going back to sermon 2 now.
Yeah, totally. I think the reflection is an important bit because, like, again, as humans, like, we'll keep failing and we'll keep being angry or being annoyed or being or offending people. But I think, if you're reflecting on your actions and trying to grow in godly character, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Model the 3 M's like we've been looking at.
3 M's, the 6 M's altogether. We're coming up.
Oh, sorry, 3 M's.
That's right. We're talking about this all next week, modeling good godly character.
M's. Yes.
But I think, I've heard a lot of conversations recently that sometimes you have to have those hard conversations. You don't know how it's going to go. Mm. And sometimes it seems like it's a completely lost cause. But after whatever, several months, years, some people come back and say, I'm so glad you had that hard conversation with me. And this is even amongst ourselves as Christians.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we can give each other like a hard, like a easy pass sometimes because, oh yeah, we both go to church. But we have a lot of building up of each other to do as well.
Yeah, totally.
But I mean, it's cool to see, people inviting their friends along to church, inviting their friends to youth or whatever, blend the worlds together, you know, if you can.
This reminds me of like, you know, when you go to parties or when you're hosting your own party and you're inviting friends from your different circles, in quotation marks.
I
you're like trying to
that.
Blend your friends.
Oh, that's terrible. Have you done it before?
I personally have not done it.
Oh, it's always so awkward, isn't it?
It's And then you, like, I get the intention behind it, obviously. I've been to parties where that's happened, or as in, you know, when a friend has invited their different circles, and it always just ends up being, you know, you hang out with the people that you know.
Yeah.
For good reason. Like, you're there to, you know, have a good time.
But also, you'll never see the other people again in your life.
I mean, not never, but rarely.
Yeah. How likely is it you're going to see the other person or the other group of friends again? Unless, you know, you had a mega time at the party. You said, oh, I remember you from that time when we did all that. But rarely.
Yeah. But I think I think the concept behind it is interesting. Like trying to blend your worlds. It's sort of like how we talk about like we all have our Christian friends and our non-Christian friends. How do we make church or Christianity less intimidating for non-Christians?
Yep.
Who might have an accurate idea of what church is, or who might have a wildly inaccurate idea. I think, yeah, trying to get them to come along to things that you and your Christian friends are doing is a good way.
It doesn't have to be a Christian event.
Not at all. I think even like a Christian event makes it that much more intimidating. Because you're like, here, come to this Christian event with me.
That's true. Some girls recently have been, I mean, what they do a sip in, what's it called? Sip and paint? Dip in wine? Is there another one?
Cork and Chroma.
Sorry?
Cork and Chroma. Well, Cork that's like Chroma. The official one.
Oh, sip and dip.
Sip and paint.
Sip and paint.
Well, there's dip and paint too.
Oh, okay. Anyway, whatever it is. Point is, so many rhymes.
You all know what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, you invite your friends along to that. You know, it's not a Christian event, but you're getting to know the group of people and they're not so bad. I've invited my friends to come play games with us, is what we do. Or go, you know, whether that's on computers or sport. That works out. And you find out Christians aren't so freaky.
Yeah, pretty normal.
Get them into your home. I love having non-Christians over at my house now. Because like you just get to see a slice of life and it's not so different.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a bit more purposeful and I think that's nice to share.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people don't know what they're doing most of the week.
That's so true.
Yeah. When you clock off work, what do you do at night? I don't know.
You know what I think about this TV? All the time. Not all the time, sorry. I think about this a lot. Yes.
Right?
Yes. Because we've got, this is not a bad thing, but we've got like life group. If you're serving a ministry, you've got ministry meetings. Then we've got church on Sundays. I'm just like, what do non-Christians do with all their spare time?
Chill out. They must have so much rest after work.
But I think a lot of people are also really lonely. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm sure some non-Christians have a great social life.
Yeah.
Or like, you know.
That's why they love pub trivia so much, because it's their social night of the week.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. Don't want to assume. Maybe one of.
But everyone I've heard that goes to pub trivia always has a fantastic time. I love pub trivia. And they do it so consistently.
Have you not gone to pub trivia
before? I went to my second one last term and it was great. I had a great time.
I used to do it with my workmates once every week.
They have professional trivia masters.
Yeah.
It's a job. These guys are good.
It's a job.
Anyway, bringing back to your point.
Point is, I often think like they must have a lot of spare time and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Nor is it a bad thing. Anyway.
Because I feel like if I wasn't a Christian and I had that much spare time, like, I just wouldn't know what to do with myself. And again, because I'm not like an extrovert, like I'm quite introverted.
Sure.
I don't think I'd put myself out there that much.
Right.
Anyways, just a thought bubble.
Okay.
No, all this to say, like, you know, they might be more keen on like the invitation to hang out.
Yep. You never know.
With a group of people, regardless if they're Christian or not.
That's fair.
So whether it's like a hobby that you have. Yep. So like for you, it's gaming. For me, it's like rock climbing.
Oh.
Bouldering.
True.
Come along. It's great. It's very social as well. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like opportunity.
It's a good opportunity. We're just hanging out. It's no pressure, no stakes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sam Chan does this fantastic book. I don't know what it's called, but it's all about blending your worlds together, where it's, if you go to their things, they'll go to your things.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think that was quite a critical thing that I missed out on when I tried to, get my friends to come along to church, which is, I never showed up to their things because, you know, I thought, you know, partying is not necessary, or like, you know, going to whatever these frivolous events are, not necessary. But why then would they want to come to my things?
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
I remember thinking about that, the principle of that when, like work friends would invite me to things and I'd just be like, oh, again, because I've got a lot of things going on in my weekend. Like, I don't need to go.
Exactly, yep.
But then having heard that, it's like, well, yeah. Again, if I don't rock up to their events, why would they come to my... Like, why should I expect them to come to my events that I invite them to? Anyways, and then I always end up having a great time when I go.
Yes, exactly.
It's just that getting, you know, the process of getting there is sometimes need a bit of a push. But again, if we're thinking of what is our purpose in life and, you know, how everything stems from that. Yeah, I think it's something to think about.
Two of my most successful friends blending into the church community has been me inviting them along And then I ditched them, at, I think, in the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
It wasn't on purpose. It just happened that way. I think I had to go to the toilet or I had to run off or organize something. And I was like, okay, you stay with these friends and you'll be right.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm so lucky that these people have stuck around and they made friends. They were social enough to do that. But, hey, it's a whole community effort. Don't recommend that method specifically. Yeah.
But I feel like if that was me, I'd be like, I hate you so much. What have you done?
But it's a whole community effort. We've got to embrace these people that walk into our doors and also that we get introduced to, because the more contact points, you know, the more likely they're going to see that we're a whole blend of people. You know, we're not all the same, but we still all believe in the one thing, which is God.
Yeah, this goes back to the series that we did last year about how, like, how to love your church.
Oh, yep, sure, yep.
And how you're like, yeah, I mean, ideally, if you've got time and energy, like, stick around afterwards, have a chat to people.
Sure.
Like also like ministry of the pews. Like, are you always sitting next to the same term. People?
Ministry of the pews. Fantastic. Yeah. Pray before you go to church.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it makes sense, but it's so hard to remember to do.
Yeah.
When you're like rushing, you're late. I mean, for me, I'm always late. And then you're just like trying to find a seat wherever.
I've heard that you should try and think of it as, instead of trying to get there on time, or like, sorry, instead of trying to leave or get there early, it's leave your house early.
Oh, man. I will say, I have general time blindness. I don't know if you've, like, come across the whole blindness trend on the socials. But, yes, I and my husband will tell you. I'm always the one to make us late.
Oh.
Yeah, as in I just, like, lose track of time, or I don't account for time properly.
Maybe you can turn that into a strength.
How?
I'm not sure. We'll have to think about that. So when you're so focused on something, maybe it has to be ultra productive.
No, I think it's because I try and fit too many things into like a short amount of time. That's not realistic.
Right. You should just go cold turkey and have no things on.
Oh my gosh.
Could you handle that?
Maybe.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I don't know what I was saying.
No, don't know what you're saying. I'm sorry. I derailed you.
Oh gosh, Zeke.
Happens. It happens.
My podcast partner.
Ministry of the Pews, what we're talking
about.
Yes,
Ministry of the Pews. Yeah, yeah. So, like, are you sitting in the same spot each week? Which is fine, like, if you're sitting in the same section. But, you know, are you actively avoiding people you don't know?
Sure.
Are you aiming for always sitting next to someone you know?
Yep.
And again, like, I think for me, I try and do this, but some weeks I'm just tired.
Sure.
And I'm just like, I just want to sit down.
Mm.
And I think that's fine too. But just having that mindset of being an active participant in church.
Yeah.
Yeah, before, during, and after.
Mm.
And I think that helps, again, like, for newcomers, knowing that they're not sitting on their own or they're not left with no one to talk to after church or that sort of thing. I mean, usually if someone's brought them, they're sort of looked after to an extent.
Mm.
But sometimes people just walk through the door, so.
Yep. Yep, that's true. Yeah, I think... No, I agree. That's pretty much it. We've all got a part to play. There's a time and place of how we do things, what we do. But ultimately, we do need to tell people. And there's no easy way to do it. But sometimes you just feel compelled. And I think you just got to ask God to help you.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know how else to do it, really. It's not a natural thing to do.
No. I mean, maybe for some people,
they're really good at it.
They're really confident and they like it. I think for most of us, it's really hard and scary and intimidating.
If it really affects your life and you do believe it that much, I think there's a compulsion, but then there's also, over time, a complacency.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing I've been thinking about is, it's sort of this thing that we do at church. We talk about that we got to do it. But when we live our day-to-day lives, does it look like lives transformed?
I don't think it's you mean like for other people or for us?
I mean, for us. It's all well and good to say, oh yeah, we should evangelize when we need to, when the opportunity presents. But how much are we living out lives that reflect that reality or that belief?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, let's think about how you're just interacting with Eric, for example.
Uh-huh.
What are ways that would demonstrate that you're living out a life transformed, or that you're preaching the gospel, not necessarily like, you know, evangelizing to him, but, you know.
Eric's my husband, by the way, in case that wasn't clear. Well, one thing we do every Sunday is after the sermon, we'll like discuss it. And so at least we're keeping it fresh in our minds, or at least we're talking about it. And so, and I think the act of talking about it helps cement it a bit more. And so you can process your own thoughts about it rather than regurgitating what you've just been told, and coming to your own practical conclusion of what that means for you. I think that's one good way on a Sunday to grow in your faith.
Sure.
And grow in a way. So like thinking about together. It more. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also just, I think in general, when you see the other person doing something that you don't agree with or sure. doing something contrary to what someone with a godly character might do
right.
is just reminding them. And again, I think with your spouse, you can be a bit more like brutally honest.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to like beat around the bush. To a fault
though.
Yes, to a fault. But depending on your relationship, yeah, you don't have to be around the bush as much. You can just be like, you know, that like, I don't think you should be doing that.
Sure.
So keeping each other accountable as well. I think it's good. What do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I've been thinking about this in a bit and I think lately, one of the things I really struggle with is being actually not lately of all time is being gracious or being, cause I hold myself to a high standard.
Okay.
And my spouse, I also hold to a high standard because okay. we're around each other around a lot.
Yeah. Fair.
And I might be more gracious to others or speak more kindly to others, yes, but I see. The familiarity breeds contempt because it's like, how come you haven't chucked the toilet roll? You know, after the 80th time I've reminded you. And then because of that repeated offense, or you could call it, then I become very not gracious when really, I mean, sometimes I really could be using nicer words, especially when I'm hangry. I speak very ungraciously.
Yeah.
And usually, yeah, it's a high standard I hold myself to, which then comes out as impatient or angry or short with my words.
Yeah. Sorry, you keep going.
No, I feel challenged that, yeah, to live a godly life and to speak, you know, godliness, it's important for me to live that, well, to be conscious of how I'm doing that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this reminds me of Life Group Week 2, where we talked about the fruits of the Spirit.
Oh, sure.
And like, which ones are you modeling well? Which ones do you need to improve on?
Right. Okay.
I think for me, again, going back to podcast ep 1, oh my gosh, we're jumping around. I I'm quite judgmental. And I think I could work on just being more, and I said this to my life group, genuinely kind to people. So not just putting it on, and this was in the context of work. So not just putting it on because you have to be collegiate and whatnot, but genuinely wanting to be kind to this person. So I'm thinking of this particular person, like when the question came up in life group, who I just find really difficult to work with. He grinds my gears a lot.
Grinds the gears.
Yeah, our personalities just clash and it's not great. I don't know how else to explain it. And sometimes I'll be like, I have been trying to work on this relationship because again, trying to be model a godly character. Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yes.
Not be so quick to judge, episode whatnot. One. And so sometimes, you know, we'll get to a point where I'm like, wow, I think our relationship has really come so far. And then I'll do like another thing. And then immediately I'm like back to like
square
one. So I think working on kindness and like love towards not just him, but like all people that I work with and interact with.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I mean, I guess that's sort of the question. What can we do now to participate in the work of the Lord in our spheres of influence? So wherever we're at, whether you're working at work, you're at home, you're at church, wherever you are day to day, what can you do to actively do this?
I don't know if there's like a thing that you can actively do this is a bit of a cop-out answer too, but I think it's more to do with if you continue to grow your relationship with God. Like, I think all this will flow naturally because, again, it all stems from the heart, right? And so if your heart is ultimately in the right place and your relationship with God is a healthy one, like, I think all this will come.
Right.
And because you don't want to be doing it through your own efforts because then you just keep failing, right?
That's true.
So I think the only way to do it successfully is to lean on God to help you change.
That's cool. Lean on God to help you change. Yeah. I agree. Number one, you got to rely on God.
Yes.
I think, to live a godly life, you've got to A, know who God is. And the more you know who God is, the more you can be like God. And then we just keep living godly lives, which eventually leads to opportunities for us to... It all comes around for us to say something when the time comes and be ready to say it, not be afraid to say it.
Yes.
And then boom.
There's that confidence because you're not relying on yourself.
Yeah, that's it. Whisper that prayer before you get in there.
whisper that prayer. Oh,
that rhymes. Fantastic. Whisper that prayer before you get in there.
That should be. You know when you listen to, this is a side note again. You know when you listen to sermons and then like someone has like a zinger of a phrase and like when they say it, you look around at the people next to you and you're like, oh, that was a great phrase. That was pretty good.
Yeah. So. That's one of them?
Yeah. I mean, it could be.
I've had times where I've said it. Yeah, I think mid-sermon I've said something and I didn't intend it to be a zinger, but it came out as a zinger. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. But I hadn't anticipated repeating that phrase, so we haven't done it. But yeah, no, that's cool. I think we talked a lot about, yeah, different things about how we can, I guess, live godly lives, which is what we'll be looking at in the sermon next week. But
ooh,
a lot of that comes down to how are we thinking actively about, there is that priority to tell people about Jesus, ultimately.
Yes.
That's the ultimate goal.
Yes.
No matter what we're doing, where we're doing it, how we're doing it is important. It all leads to the ultimate goal of having people know Jesus. And I think having that mindset really changes how we do things. Not that it's the be all. You don't have to be like, oh, I have to be friends with this guy just to do this. But
yes,
at some point you go, man, if I really do like this guy a lot and I do want to let him know.
And there are like multiple, and yeah, I guess there are multiple steps to get there. It's not like, one, be friends with this person. Two, evangelize straight away.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think so. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I should have ended on the zinger. I feel like.
No, you got to make another one.
That's okay. Yeah, all right. I think it's a good time to head to our next bit, which is the questions from the crowd.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know if that's the name for this next segment, but we'll just call it that for now.
Work in progress.
All right. The question for this week is, if doctors and garbage men are on the same value before God, what merit is there to pursue something requiring more effort?
Oh,
that's an interesting one. So this touches on a few things like the same value before God, as in like we're all made in the image of God. And then, you know, there's a world view on, you know, doctors being, you know, in a better standing than garbage men. And if we're all the same before God, why should we try and pursue something that takes more effort, more study, if ultimately we're all just trying to evangelize or something anyway? What's even the point of that? See, this is a good one because at the start of the sermon last week, there was this thing about the creation mandate, which is talking about how our role in this earth before the fall was to rule and subdue the land. And there's elements of doing the best you can. It's another theological point called human flourishing, right? Which is like you want to flourish and help other humans flourish and do the best that they can as God made them. But what do you reckon? What merit is there to pursue something requiring more effort?
I don't know if it's merit, if we're talking about merit per se. I don't think there's anything wrong with pursuing being a doctor if that's what you want to do as a career. And like doctors need evangelizing too, so that's not...
Sure.
It's not like they're fine and like we should all be garbage men. Yeah, like I think at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with being a doctor. Like there's nothing wrong with being a doctor. There's nothing wrong with being a garbage man. If that's the career that you want to pursue in this world, like I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. Again, if your heart is in the right place, like sure you can get more money, whatever. But again, like I think if we're keeping our purpose in life, our real purpose in life front of mind, I don't see any issue with pursuing whatever career you want to pursue. No. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's no one job necessarily better than another in terms of our value. Okay, we get that. And we're actually lucky. We're very lucky in the West that we get to choose our careers.
Yeah, that's true. That's
cool. You know, it could very well be the case that you just have to do whatever your dad did. Mm. And that's probably the truth for most of humanity, really, that you didn't actually have that much choice to just do whatever you felt like or had all that, you know, all the choice to go off and study and do things. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think, yeah, there's no issue with pursuing things that require more effort. Again, it's always a motivation behind it. Why do you do it? And I had a chat with this young uni student who's pre-med at the moment at UQ. So he's not yet in med, but he's getting into med soon. Mm. And I said to him, what's the purpose of your work? You know, he goes, well, I guess it's to study to get into medicine. So that's, and then I said, well, what's the purpose of getting into medicine? Is it just to make money? You know, why did you choose to do that? And it was very interesting that he said to me, he goes, I don't think you'd get very far if you decide to do medicine if you didn't at least care a little bit for people. Because the people that do get into it for the money usually don't pass all the tests or the requirements.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but there is an element of, you know, caring, and you have to be willing to do all that stuff that makes you a better doctor than another. So I guess the motivations behind why you pursue anything particularly, and if at any point that changes where it's no longer helpful, then maybe that's something to think about. There's certainly no issues with it because, like you said, doctors still need to be evangelized to where their sphere of influence, you know, in that sector of society, whatever it is, still people in every sector still need to hear Christ and know Christ and see a godly person. I see no issue whatsoever.
And again, sort of on the flip side, like being a doctor isn't the only occupation where you can help people.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Either. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I was a lawyer and I know some lawyers who love their job. They love advising people. They get a kick out of it.
Yeah, right.
And they would say that they're doing the best. They're doing their best work and they feel they have real purpose and meaning in doing it. And that through their positivity, you know, they get to influence.
You know what? This also goes back to what we were talking about with talents.
Yes.
Like, what are your talents?
Oh, of course. Yes. Right.
Like maybe your talent is something that leads you to becoming a doctor.
Sure.
Like I know for me, not a doctor.
That's
couldn't,
okay.
Couldn't do it. Couldn't do all the studying.
Don't even want to do it.
Don't even want to do it. Exactly. Whereas some other people, like that might be where their talents are leading them.
Sure.
And so why not?
You absolutely should put effort into whatever you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
But with good reason.
Yeah.
I think that's ultimately all it is. And I could be wrong. Hey, we're going to talk about this in a future sermon. I know for sure.
We're not pretending to have all the answers. No, we're just having a chat.
That makes sense to me. Yeah, whatever you do, do it with good reason. Yeah. And always reevaluate. Mistrust yourself. You never know if you're deceiving yourself.
Also pray.
Ah, good one.
Yeah. I think that's something to keep in mind.
I like where that's ended. And if in doubt.
And.
Pray. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, April. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope, you had something to think about there in terms of what it means to do the work of the Lord. Something that we've got to always be thinking about, but it's also something that we just live.
Yeah.
It's not something that we reserve for Sundays or the special moments, but it's something that we live.
And it's something we're always working on.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that's all we are. We're just works in progress.
Works in progress.
Oh, I should name that our podcast. Works in progress.
That's a good one.
Man, episode 3. That's okay. Next time we'll come, Graham. All right, that's a wrap.
All right, bye.